This is the WMRA Daily Podcast for Thursday, February 19th, 2026. I'm Chris Boros. Virginia continues to make headlines as Democrats in leadership look to gain an edge in Washington ahead of the 2026 midterm elections. Virginia Public Radio's Brad Kuttner has this.
Senate President Louise Lucas said new, slightly edited congressional maps her chamber released Wednesday may appear to be about shifting lines in the 757 to be even more favorable for Democrats, but she said it was more of a cleanup.
Yeah, that had to do with some of the boundary lines around the river streams and stuff like that. And I know some people are saying that it made the second congressional district more Democratic. It may have by a point or two, but that wasn't the real reason.
House Speaker Don Scott reiterated the redistricting effort was about, quote, leveling the playing field. And the new Senate map?
As far as any one particular map that's coming from the Senate right now, we'll take a look at that. But I think what's more important, Donald Trump picked up the phone and called Texas and said redo the maps to make it because his policies are so bad he can't win without rigging the election.
Voters in Virginia also woke Wednesday to the news Fairfax County delegate Dan Helmer was running in the newly redrawn 7th district he helped create. Helmer said he wasn't involved directly in the map-making process, but he took credit for helping to build the over 60-seat majority that has approved the effort so far. His message for voters ahead of a likely primary?
Look, I took on MAGA in 2019, unseated a 17-year Republican incumbent who refused to stand up to Trump or the NRA. There are 17 Republicans who have gone home since I've been in campaigns chair, and we have the largest, most diverse progressive majority in Virginia history. And I think that's what America is looking for right now. That's certainly what Virginia 7 is looking for.
The newly edited maps are set for a vote in the Senate Thursday before heading to the House and Governor Abigail Spanberger's desk. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Members of the Virginia General Assembly are halfway through the legislative process. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope tells us what's happened so far.
Affordability is the watchword for Democrats who run the House of Delegates and the state Senate. Now that the General Assembly session is halfway over, Speaker of the House Don Scott says Democrats are showing restraint, and he says they're focusing on what he calls common sense solutions.
Bills that lower energy bills, bills that lower the cost of medicine and health care, bills that protect renters and expand affordable housing, bills that make child care more affordable. Those are the things that we were elected to do, and those are the things that we have delivered on.
Republican Senate Leader Ryan McDougal says Democrats' so-called affordability agenda is a hoax.
You cannot tell Virginians in political ads or speeches that you're for affordability and then support the policies that take money out of their pocket or kill the policies that would actually make their lives more affordable. That is a bait and switch. That is a hoax. It's just not true.
Now that the session is halfway over, leaders on the money committees will be focusing on balancing the books for the next fiscal year. The House and Senate will both release their proposed budgets on Sunday. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
The number of pharmacies across Virginia is declining, especially in rural areas. And while proposed legislation to support pharmacies in communities without them has been tabled by the Virginia House of Delegates, one Scottsville man is working feverishly to bring a drugstore back to his hometown. WMRA's Christine Cuter reports.
Eddie Payne was just 17 when he and a friend paddled their canoe right through the front of Bruce's drugstore. The year was 1969, and Hurricane Camille was quickly submerging Scottsville's downtown. Payne had already lost his sneakers, unbolting church pews from the floor to try to save them. He also wanted to rescue photos from the drugstore, where plate glass windows had been shattered by the rising water. It was a moment for action, Payne recalled. Kind of like now.
Well, you know, you can't sit back and wait. You've got to do something. And that's what I'm trying to do now.
Today, Payne is 73 and wants to save Scottsville again, this time by bringing back a community pharmacy.
Well, Scottsville's got a 200-year history of being a health care hub. In the early days, in the 1800s especially, we were an economic hub and a transportation hub for Southern Albemarle, Western Fluvanna County, Northern Buckingham, even a little piece of Nelson, and of course the town of Scottsville. And of that 200 years, 150 years, we had a drugstore here. And now we don't.
Nearly 18% of Americans live in a pharmacy desert, according to a 2025 study published in the journals of the American Medical Association. In rural areas, that means there's no pharmacy within 10 miles. Virginia had 99 fewer community pharmacies in 2025 than it did in 2020, which contributed to 51 pharmacy deserts across the state. Scottsville is one. It hit local seniors hard.
It's so many reasons why a small neighborhood drugstore is important to a town this size. 25% of our population is over 65 senior citizens. The median age of the residents is 49 as opposed to the state median of 39. So even the young people are older, if you can grasp that.
Scottsville had an apothecary in the early 1800s, but it was Bruce's Drugstore and later Scottsville Pharmacy a few doors away where locals got health advice, over-the-counter medicines, vaccines, and had their prescriptions filled. When Scottsville's last community pharmacy closed in 2023, a Rite Aid opened in the strip mall near the Food Lion. But it, too, closed last May when its parent company filed for bankruptcy.
That's kind of hard. We all missed it. We were all very sad and knew that it was going to be a hardship to get our, at least our short-term prescriptions like I was talking about for antibiotics, etc., that you need today. Yeah, it was a loss to our community.
You know, not that many years ago, the pharmacist, a pharmacist, community pharmacist at a pharmacy, was the most accessible healthcare professional to most people.
Pharmacist Justin Vesser oversees UVA Health's 9 community and 11 clinic pharmacies.
People only see the value in how can I get the medication that I need in the cheapest and most convenient way possible. But yes, you need to have access to your medications. You need to be able to afford it, but you also need to know how to use it. You also need to know, is this the right thing for me? Someone who knows you, who talks to you every month, who has your profile in the computer so they can say, oh yes, your doctor, from your specialist has prescribed this, but they don't know that you're also on something else that would have a interaction with it or might be dangerous. They don't know what type of things you use over the counter. And that's really what the value of retail pharmacy is. It's a healthcare professional that you can walk in and talk to and get expert advice from, and, you know, direct care. And when those dry up in rural areas, those patients are often left with no alternative.
According to the JAMA study, more than 2/3 of American adults use at least one medication, 90% of which are filled at community pharmacies. Many, like pain, can get regular prescriptions by mail, but delays and mailed medications' exposure to temperature extremes mean it's not foolproof.
Besides the porch pirates that you have to deal with, or the ones that get packages that get misdelivered, if mail order works, I think it's good, but it's not perfected yet.
Rural towns like Scottsville stood to benefit from House Bill 335, a pilot program that would offer grants to strengthen existing community pharmacies or establish them in pharmacy deserts. Though the bill was tabled February 6 when a subcommittee determined it lacked the necessary funding to get off the ground, a budget amendment that would offer $600,000 for the program remains in play. Payne is not deterred. He's urging people in Scottsville and across Virginia to call their representatives to support rural pharmacies. He's urging neighbors with retail properties to consider a low or no rent lease for a community pharmacy. And he's looking into state grants and partnership opportunities with Virginia Commonwealth University and the Appalachian College of Pharmacy to draw talent to town.
But I'm not going to give up. That's my unfinished business.
Payne is also making plans to run for a 4th term as Scottsville Town Councilor this November. For WMRA News, I'm Christine Cuter.
You can find photos from this story at WMRA.org or by using the WMRA app. The University of Virginia recently submitted its first quarterly report to the U.S. Department of Justice as part of an agreement to halt investigations into the school's diversity, equity, and inclusion practices. But some faculty in the School of Nursing say part of what the university reported is not accurate. Megan Pauly with VPM News has this.
The report states that UVA revised the nursing school's faculty and tenure evaluation materials, quote, to remove questions or criteria assessing candidates on their promotion of diversity or similar concepts, end quote. However, multiple faculty members in the School of Nursing told VPM News that language is incorrect. The faculty members VPM News spoke with have been recent chairs of the school's promotion and tenure committee and said diversity hasn't been a consideration for tenure and promotion decisions. VPM News reached out to UVA for comment, but did not get a response to questions about this language by deadline. A UVA spokesperson did say that the next quarterly report to DOJ officials will be submitted in March, and all future reports will be posted on the university's website.
Megan Pauly reporting. Late Wednesday, a UVA spokesperson acknowledged the issue and said to the extent clarifications are necessary, the university would make them in its March report. Members of the General Assembly are considering a bill that would decriminalize suicide. Michael Pope has this.
Suicide is a common law crime in Virginia, something that was inherited from British law back in the 1700s, when people who died by suicide forfeited all their property to the king. In 1961, British Parliament decriminalized suicide, but it's still a crime in Virginia, one that Delegate Marcus Simon wants to get rid of.
You have a lot of people that have lost a loved one to suicide that just really don't like having the stigma of having their loved one labeled a criminal, when in fact, in their view, it's someone who succumbed, unfortunately, to mental illness and shouldn't be deemed a criminal.
He says the law harms survivors who might not receive benefits, or people who attempt suicide who might not be able to receive mental health treatment because they're guilty of criminal activity. Michael Huffman, the Independent Baptist, says the bill devalues life.
And we should do everything to protect life. If we don't make suicide a common law anymore, then kind of makes life disposable in some people's eyes.
The bill has already been approved by the House of Delegates and will be considered by the state Senate next week. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
The successful return of oysters to the Chesapeake Bay is something to celebrate, and that's what legislators in Richmond did earlier on Wednesday. Brad Kudner has this.
The Chesapeake Bay Foundation's annual Oysters on Capitol Square event, in its seventh year, is about informing lawmakers just how important the local seafood is. Jackie Shannon is with the foundation.
And being able to serve these oysters to our elected officials also helps to open conversations about water quality and the importance of maintaining a certain integrity of water quality so that oyster farmers could continue to be successful.
Eli Nichols is with Oyster Catcher Sea Farms in Little Bay, Virginia. He was shucking oysters for officials and shared his secret to the perfect shuck.
Coming in from the hinge right there. So that way when you actually get into the back of the oyster, you can lift the top shell up and work the blade all the way to the front. And then you can sweep down towards back of yourself, and then you got a fully shucked oyster right there.
The event is also a kind of contest, complete with a WrestleMania-style gold belt for an elected official who eats the most oysters. Delegate Mike Webbert made the belt after his first win 4 years ago, and he's carried with that honor the chance to announce the new winner ever since.
The winner of this year's oyster eating contest is Delegate Phil the Pearl Kudner!
Until next year, in Richmond, I'm Brad Kudner.
The Virginia Senate passed a bill Tuesday that would largely ban local law enforcement from cooperating with federal immigration and customs enforcement. Republicans said the legislation would negatively impact public safety. Democratic Senator Saddam Salim from Fairfax County, the bill's lead sponsor, pushed back.
Nothing in Senate Bill 783 stops local police from doing their job, investigating crimes and arresting dangerous people, or cooperating with federal authorities on serious criminal investigation. It is simply saying that civil immigration enforcement must be handled carefully, transparently, and in ways that respects the Constitution.
The bill now heads to the House of Delegates for consideration, where Democrats hold a near supermajority. Virginians have a clearer answer on how Democrats elected last fall plan to raise wages and lower costs. VPM News' Jad Khalil reports their legislative agenda narrowed due to budget realities.
Early this year, Democrats proposed ambitious pieces of marquee legislation: paid family and medical leave, collective bargaining rights for public employees, and having data centers pay for more of the power they use. Those bills passed out of one chamber and will now be considered in the other. House Speaker Don Scott said Wednesday his chamber had passed 225 affordability bills.
Those are the things that we were elected to do, and those are the things that we have delivered on.
While many bills are still alive, many are not, like legislation that would have eliminated the grocery tax or provided universal school breakfast. And many bills have been whittled down, adding exemptions or delaying implementation. A lot of that is due to cost, since Democrats say it's a tight budget year, and they haven't expressed a willingness to use new taxes to pay for a more ambitious agenda. Republican Senator Mark Obenshain says those tax increases could still happen.
We're going to see them one way or another again. We may see some of these tax increases reflected in the budget.
The next big day for the legislature is Sunday, when lawmakers present the state budget.
That's Jad Khalil reporting. This has been the WMRA Daily Podcast for Tuesday, February 19th, 2026. Thanks for listening.